What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. Jack, what's up?
Bench, if you're listening, I hope you enjoy this episode.
Yes, sir. We are doing our Spencer Dinwiddie season preview. Continue our series. You want to check out Kyrie or Karis? Head to iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But Jack, tell the people where they can get a Brooklyn Buzz tee.
Yeah, dsgntreedesigntree.com/offtheglass. Plenty of fire merch there, including Brooklyn Buzz tees, JBT tees, plenty of player tees, Houston Rockets, Utah Jazz, Milwaukee Bucks. We got nonstop fire merch for Off the Glass. And you can also check it out at otgbasketball.com. There's some links up there too.
Exactly. And use discount code OTG5, save yourself $5. But like I mentioned, we are diving into Spencer Dinwiddie today, coming off a great season. If not for the injury, probably one of the six men of the year. 16.8 points per game, 2.4 rebounds, 4.6 assists, 44% from the field, 33% from three, and just a hair over 80% from the line. Jack, what did you think of Spencer last year?
Yeah, I thought it was a really great season from Spencer Dinwiddie, Nick. I put it out earlier. I think I've said it ad hoc on the Brooklyn Buzz. You know, in the preseason before last year, I'm like, Spencer Dinwiddie has a chance to be a sixth man of the year contender. And I LeVar balled it. I spoke it into existence. And I was pretty high on those prospects up until, you know, when he got that thumb injury and he had to miss a couple of games. But he was absolutely outstanding in how he ran that second unit and was really clutch for us in a lot of moments, won us some games. You know, in Houston, you know, re-listening to the season review of him and Jared Allen, you forget how many big moments Spencer Dinwiddie had. And it's all, you almost forget, you know, how great of a season he did have. And I know a lot of others probably would have had him as the sixth man of the year purely because it's like him and Lou Williams are the guys that you can easily put in as your starting, you know, shooting guard, starting point guard. And that's what you want out of six man. You don't want just this sort of, you know, guy that can come off the bench that has a very limited skill set. You want a guy who is a starter. Spencer Dinwiddie is a starter in this league. He just happens to be playing a six man role within this hugely talented backcourt lineup that the Brooklyn Nets have. And last season, he had a pretty good playoffs as well. He wasn't as good as Caris LeVert, but he was very solid. And despite the fact that the numbers don't reflect, you know, a great shooting season, he had some big dagger ones and he stepped up when it really mattered too.
Yeah, and I'm sure his numbers were probably a little bit higher in terms of field goal percentage and three-point percentage before the injury because he did struggle a little bit coming back from that thumb injury like you mentioned, Jack, but he was a monster. During that stretch in like late December, early January, he had some huge games, including a career high against Philly. There was just some really big moments for Spencer Dinwiddie last year, and it's you can easily say without him on the team, the Nets don't make the playoffs. So just having a guy like that come off the bench that, you know, people were talking about him being a fringe all-star before that injury.
Yeah, I remember Charles Barkley and I think it was Kenny Smith. Both of them had him in that sort of range as being an all-star sort of fringe candidate. And yeah, when you're talking about the Brooklyn Nets, you know, he was certainly one of our most important players. The ability to adjust to that new role. I know that we've spoken about Dinwiddie in the past and, you know, because of D'Angelo Russell and Caris LeVert, their ascendancy, how would Spencer adjust? And he's had his issues in previous seasons, but he was absolutely tremendous last year. And he was a great teammate as well. And everything he did on and off the court was nothing but success.
Yeah. And with that, Jack, what would you say last year was a success or a disappointment for Spencer?
Oh, it was an absolute success. The only lack of success was the fact that he had to get injured and probably miss out on that Sixth Man of the Year award. But Lou Williams has almost renamed that award. But who knows, next season it could be his year.
Yeah, and you're right. And it's a real possibility moving into next year, especially if the Nets continue to attract a lot more hype. Obviously, Kyrie on the roster and KD. But Jack, what would you say are Spencer's biggest strengths?
Yeah, so getting to the line, obviously, he's one of only 5 point guards in the league to average 5 free throws or more. The way he uses the glass when he does drive, obviously that scoop layup and his aggression and driving with purpose. Loves a good pull-up three, his sidestep threes. We know how good he is there. It's almost his signature move. You know, Karis has joked with him about it in a couple of videos and such. General ISO play. And I think we forget how good of a passer he is as well. You know, that first season before he became this, you know, explosive scorer, he was just a tremendous passer and led the league, I believe, in assist to turnover ratio. So you can't underestimate how good of a passer he is as well, despite the fact that last season his role did adjust. And he's just all of those sort of things combined, I think he's become a really complete player. And I mentioned this in the season review podcast. I'll mention it again now. His points per shot attempt, per 100 shot attempts, are in the 91st percentile, where he gets 117.9 points per 100 shot attempts, which is pretty ridiculous. And if you're in the 91st percentile, you are an elite offensive player.
And this is a guy the Nets have coming off the bench. And you nailed it, Jack. Obviously, the driving, the speed, the scoop left, off-balance threes, getting to the line, taking care of the ball, the clutch shots. And one thing he really excels at is if he gets a switch on a big, he does a great job attacking that. Sometimes it's a step-back three, but other times he'll just dust them.
Oh, yeah. And I think he knows in his head what he's going to do. He's like, okay, well, I know who this is. I can easily get past you. I can use this handle to go left, to go right, and just finish. He has some real dexterity around the glass and knowing the different angles. And, you know, it's exciting. I think we'll probably talk about how his teammates can sort of help him. But, you know, having a guy like Kyrie Irving to teach him some even more, you know, behind the scenes sort of nifty little tricks is going to be even more insane next year.
And you mentioned it, Jack. I think his ability to use angles is really important because he combines that with his speed. And sometimes he'll have that low release point, but it'll be right next to the backboard. So the big really can't block the shot without getting a goaltend. And we saw that happen a lot last year.
Definitely. He knows how to get to the line. He knows how to draw that contact. Like I mentioned, one of only 5 point guards to actually get to the line five or more times. I hope that he can maintain that next season and continue to maintain his aggression and purpose.
Yeah, and I think another underrated aspect of his game is just the ability to initiate the offense. You know, kind of do what the coach wants, get players involved. Like you mentioned earlier, did a great job of running that second unit and making sure everybody was kind of getting things going. And at different points last year, it felt like the second unit was almost playing better than the starters.
Yeah, I think it was probably one of our biggest strengths, if not our biggest strength, when we've done team season reviews and previews and such. It's always one that sort of sticks out. It seems to still be that way, obviously, that there is some iffiness at the forward position, but we've still got some great depth and some great guys coming off the bench, and with Spencer sort of leading that, and he'll likely play starter level minutes when we get to that prediction too, and probably crunch time as well. Again, that's when Spencer did jump in the mentions. I think he's going to have a tremendous season, and I think he's, because he's had like a full season of playing that sort of backup six-man role while also contributing in crunch time and hitting some dagger threes and playing extended minutes, knowing what your role and having that consistency, I think is going to only benefit him greatly.
And we saw his offensive game last year become more complete. So now he has the ability to kind of fine-tune some things and work on things defensively. In talking about that, what would you say are the weaknesses of his game?
Yeah, I think that there aren't glaring weaknesses when it comes to Spencer's game, but obviously he can be a little bit inconsistent on defense. Sometimes his shot selection can be a little bit iffy. Despite his size, he's not a great rebounder. Last season, his turnover percentage was a little bit high. And then obviously, despite the fact that we know he's a good three-point shooter, you know, the numbers don't reflect that. You know, you want to be at that 35% mark as a bare minimum, and he wasn't at that mark. But yeah, those are certainly things that I think aren't necessarily that hard to sort of fix up. I think those are easily rectifiable, and they aren't necessarily huge detriments to the Brooklyn Nets team overall.
Yeah, you mentioned that three was a little bit inconsistent last year. I would have liked to see his numbers probably if he wasn't injured. I think they'd probably be a little bit higher because he did really struggle when he came back. But you're right, for his size, rebounding, he doesn't necessarily like to get down in there. And then obviously there's not really a ton of a mid-range game or, you know, a low post game or any of that in-between stuff, which isn't necessarily very important in the Nets offense because they're mostly looking for threes and layups. But you mentioned the defense, which is inconsistent, but he showed us the ability to play really good defense at points in the playoffs. It's now kind of transferring that over to the course of a full season.
Yeah, definitely. I know that we were listening to the podcast, you said that Kenny would almost be frustrated with the high level of defense he was showing in the playoffs, that he couldn't show it consistently, you know, especially when he isn't LeBron James. He doesn't have to conserve energy. He's not 35 in his 17th season. But I think he showed, and he showed moments throughout the regular season as well. Like, I remember some defense that he played on Blake Griffin. I've been trying to do a breakdown of his defensive game, but unfortunately the NBA stats website is down and there's no video that I can necessarily access. But, you know, he had some moments throughout the season, and that's why I said inconsistent. It doesn't mean he's a bad defender. It's almost worse because he has the acumen, he has the size, he has the strength. His trainer has said it as well, that he hopes the Nets are a decent defensive team. So hopefully he can improve that side of the floor next season.
Yeah, I think one area talking defense where he could get better is kind of getting over screens and fighting through that. Sometimes he tries to draw contact, and if he can kind of slide through them almost like Harris does, where he gets a step in front of the screener. So he if he's going to set that screen, he's going to foul him. And I think Spencer has that ability because we know he's quick. He's lanky. He can kind of get through small areas. But what area do you want to see improve next season?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to go to what his trainer sort of was saying to the New York Daily News when he was interviewed and was talking about what they've been working on the offseason. And he said a lot of three-pointers, playing through contact and adding a couple more finishes to his game. And in relation to those finishes, adding a lot of two-foot finishes, Tony Parker style. And I like guys to finish in the paint, so different options there. Working on a couple of hooks. And so just involving his game around that area. I know you sort of said the mid-range sort of game, but that back-to-the-basket game, but it's good to hear that obviously because defense is going to be honed in and know what he does now, and they know that he is elite, it's good to hear that he's sort of working on those different things. Obviously, it's incredibly hard to work on defense unless it's in training camp, and no doubt he's probably doing that. Coach Kenny's demanding that from him at these early stages, but good to see that the things that we sort of touched on a little bit and he's going to improve on, likely if you're working on them in the offseason, you know, Spencer's going to be working hard, and I think that he's going to improve.
And I think Sean Marks mentioned at his press conference that Spencer's usually the first guy in the gym. So obviously we know he is working hard all summer. Like you mentioned, the defense, think a higher percentage on the off-ball three, you know, catch and shoot situation, because now playing with Kyrie and Karis taking another step forward, those opportunities are definitely going to be there. And like you said, if he's developing some nice counters in the paint to the moves he already has, that's great. Maybe just a slight teardrop, because obviously sometimes the paint gets crowded, but you do have space. Nothing too crazy, but just right around that free throw line. But I don't think there's really a lot to ask him to improve for this year. If he were to come back and almost have an identical season other than the injury last year, I think we'd be pretty happy.
Yeah, I think that teardrop you sort of mentioned, Nick, if you're talking about Tony Parker, he's one of the greatest ever when it comes to that sort of mid-floater sort of range. And I think that Spencer's probably, you know, we saw, you know, probably glimpses of it, but obviously you would almost rather him keep on driving. But as a counter, like if you're facing Rudy Gobert, you need to have something like that because, you know, when you have the elite defenders, Miles Turner, Joel Embiid, you want to have those counters. And he did also say that they're working on creating space off the dribble to give him more space, you know, when he's doing his side steps and cross step sort of separation. So working on the tight handle, and he already does have a good handle, but to create that space, to give him more space to get that three and to attack, obviously you want to keep that nice and tight.
Yeah, especially late in the shot clock. It always seems like he ends up getting the ball with like 5 seconds on the clock. So obviously having those moves that can get you space real quick always help out. But where can his teammates and his coaches help?
Yeah, I mean, we sort of touched on it a little bit with Kyrie Irving. I think it's just learning little things and tricks of the trade, you know, how to sort of where to finish off the glass, how to like angle your hands. And obviously, there's only so many things that you can physically do that Kyrie can, because Kyrie is just a wizard when he has the ball in his hands around the basket. But just to be able to learn the tricks of the trade there, I think Kyrie's probably really good at evading contact as well and avoiding, and which Spencer probably draws it a little bit more. So I think that there's areas that they can learn from each other in that sort of point. And then I guess in terms of lineups, running with that second unit and then trying to keep one of Taurean Prince or Joe Harris out there, two of our best three-point shooters, because then you've got that space. So to open up the lane, when you've got Taurean Prince or Joe Harris out there, guys are going to be locked in on them. And then obviously the bigs, you know, both of our bigs can provide quality vertical spacing. Hopefully DeAndre continues to work on that screening so we can open up the lanes, as does Jared Allen. We know that there's some good chemistry and a really nice friendship there. And in fact, I'll ask you this, Nick, because I was going to mention this on an episode of The Buzz, but I think it's probably better for now. In his Q&A that he did a couple of weeks ago, he said he actually thinks that Kyrie and KD can add new dimensions to his game. In terms of those new dimensions, what do you think those could be?
That's a really great question, Jack. Obviously, they would know a little bit better, but it could be the smallest thing of just a little footwork down in the paint. Like you mentioned with Kyrie, maybe a different counter, a different layup package that he hasn't really thought of. And obviously, KD can pretty much teach you anything about offense. So it's kind of tough to say when you have two of the, you know, greatest offensive talents in the league right now, what is he going to learn from? There's a lot he can learn and take his game probably to another level. But like you mentioned, the other things, I think just having two bigs that can catch oops will be huge for him, because last year was mostly Jared Allen. And if you weren't paired with Jared Allen, you'd get Ed Davis, who could set a great screen, but he doesn't really give you that vertical spacing. I remember going to last year, we kind of hoped Kenneth Reed would provide that, but he really didn't get the playing time. So having Jordan and Allen should really benefit a guy who can just kill it in pick and roll, especially if he gets that mismatch or just going right to the rim.
Yeah, all of our guards have really quality pick and roll play, and Spencer is no different.
Now, Jack, what's his role on the team going to be next year? We kind of already talked about it, but, you know, most likely a bench player, right?
Yeah, he's going to be the sixth man. But again, like we sort of said, it doesn't necessarily matter if you're starting in this league. It's about if you're closing. Some people still want that, you know, when they're announced on ESPN, they want to be with the starters, but it doesn't necessarily matter. If you're closing games, it shows that you are a more important player. And I think Spencer will be closing the majority of games given matchups.
And I think this year he'll probably get more starts than probably last season because D'Lo, I think, missed one game off last year. We already kind of anticipate Kyrie getting some load management at different points. So I would see Spencer, you know, maybe start a couple games. Like you said, majority of the season, it's going to be the bench, but he's going to probably play some starter minutes, probably close to top five on the team if I had to guess.
Yeah, definitely. In terms of his minutes, I'll probably give him 28 or 29 minutes, similar to across his career. Obviously, there's going to be minutes to manage with that backcourt, but it was obviously minutes to manage last season as well. You know, you've got to give a large portion to Kyrie Irving and Karras, both likely and definite starters. But if you are headlining the sort of backup unit, Spencer's probably going to be, you know, third or fourth in minutes, like you sort of mentioned, Nick.
Yeah, I think 29, 28 is around the same spot that I'm thinking. What are you thinking usage-wise?
I think it was 24% last season. I think I'll probably give him 23%. I mean, it's hard to sort of how they gauge usage. Obviously, he's going to have the large majority of usage with the second unit, so it could be a little bit higher of a number. But when he is out there with the likes of Kyrie and Karras, that usage could drop. So I guess it's all sort of relative to who he's playing with. So I'll probably give him 23%, just a percentage less, even though it doesn't necessarily mean a heap.
Yeah, I agree. I think it could drop to 23. It could even possibly maybe drop to 22 because you think Kenny's mentioned a lot trying to play like Spencer, Kyrie, and Karras together. And then those situations, he's not going to get as many touches. But who knows? It could still be around 25 because, like you mentioned, that second unit, he's going to have the ball in his hands. There's obviously a little bit better playmakers this season, but still he's going to be the guy running the show. What's your prediction on his stat line, Jack?
Yeah, I'm going to give him 16 points, 3 rebounds, 4.5 assists. 0.8 steals, 36% from three, 44% from the field, and 80% from the free throw line. That's one area that Karras could learn from Spencer with. Spencer is a much more efficient free throw shooter and has generally about that 80% sort of mark for his career. Obviously, that's the sort of, you know, agreeable average sort of mark and an acceptable mark that you'd want. Not everyone can be Kyrie Irving and Stephen Curry and Kevin Durant and average 95% near from that free throw sort of line, but 80% is an acceptable mark. And that's one area that I forgot to mention that he is another strength of his. You know, when he's at the line, I feel pretty confident.
Yeah, definitely. You feel probably maybe last season the most confident guy at the line, maybe other than Joe Harris.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's certainly true.
Especially considering, like we talked about, how many free throws he really shot. But stat line, not much different over here. 16 points, 5 assists, 3 rebounds, 45% from the field, 36% from 3, and 80 at the free throw line. I think the assist numbers have the possibility of maybe taking a jump this year just because there's more probably offensive talent maybe with that second unit, depending if, you know, Rodions is with the team or Torian Prince is, you know, playing big minutes and how his minutes are kind of around. And like we talked about, now having Jared Allen and DeAndre, all of our guards are always going to have somebody to catch a noop from or throw a noop to.
Yeah, and we know that he is an incredible passer and, you know, possesses incredible acumen as a passer and in terms of his assist numbers. So it'll be interesting to see how that balance sort of comes back. Obviously, you know, the focus isn't necessarily, if he is leading that second unit, you want him to sort of be the focal point of the offense. If he's sort of out there with, you know, the likes of, you know, Garrett Temple and Rodion Skurutz and whoever else it might be, DeAndre or Jared, whoever's not starting, you know, you want the ball in Spencer's hands. You want him creating and initiating the offense. But that does also mean if there's some quality spacing out there. And, you know, I think assist numbers, you know, it depends on how good your guys are at finishing those shots. You know, if Rodion's, you know, increases his number from the three-point percentage line, then that means probably an increase in assist numbers for a guy like Spencer Dinwiddie. It's about the other guys making their shots and obviously Spencer creating quality shots, which is, you know, I think a strength area that we spoke about with Karis LeVert. His assist percentage was quite high via cleaning the glass as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting year in how all these pieces gel in the lineups that Kenny kind of rolls with and how it impacts different players in the team, because just there's going to be a lot of different lineups because there's a lot of different players on the squad. But Jack, where is Spencer going to finish in terms of the six-man race? Do you think he's going to finish top three, top two?
Yeah, I think that at a bare minimum, if he is healthy, he'll finish top three. And I guess that's probably my biggest question for the season. Can he usurp Lou Williams for that Sixth Man of the Year award? And according to an Aussie sporting betting website, he is second in favoritism behind Lou Williams, in front of the likes of Terrence Ross, Montrezl Harrell, and Eric Gordon. You know, Eric Gordon, I think, is a sneaky sort of, you know, if I had some money on me, I'd probably put some money on Eric Gordon, because I think signing that contract and at a good number, I think that he's probably going to be around that mark and will take a little bit more of a jump in terms of what we've seen from him last season. He had a really good end to the season and a nice playoffs. So I think my three favorites would be Spencer, Lou, and Eric Gordon. I think Spencer Dinwiddie is the best overall, most complete player out of those guys. But Lou Williams and Eric Gordon are just pure six men as well. But Eric Gordon, it depends on how much he is going to be starting with, you know, the likes of Russell Westbrook and such, how much he will be coming off the bench. Whereas we know Spencer and Lou are going to be coming off the bench. You know what? I'm going to be pessimistic, because then it's better you be the optimistic one. You know, I reckon Lou will's probably going to have it. But Spencer will probably make it a little bit closer as long as he's healthy.
And you mentioned Eric Gordon, and there's been a lot of talk about Houston possibly starting him this year. So if they take him out of the race, it's between Spencer and Lou Will. And then you look at, you know, obviously the Clippers bringing in Kawhi and Paul George. How much does that impact him? Obviously, two of the best scorers in the NBA. You know, the Nets have Kyrie and Karis, but Karis isn't at that level yet. So who knows? There could be an opportunity for Spencer and maybe a little voter's fatigue of voting for Lou Will, which seems like every single year, maybe they'll go with him. And I think even Montrezl Harrell, there's been talk about him possibly starting. So who knows? Maybe Spencer might get lucky from the sense that he's the only guy who's consistently coming off the bench and he just has all the shots for himself.
Yeah, I think it all sort of depends on the Sixth Man of the Year race. Can, like you sort of mentioned, Nick, it could depend on everyone else and what their sort of roles are. And we could see, you know, some guys, you know, really leapfrog and be, you know, six men that we didn't necessarily expect coming off the bench. There could be some guys out of nowhere and create a narrative for themselves. It's a really hard award to predict. It's not like MVP or Defensive Player of the Year. There's a lot more shocks outside of, you know, probably Lou Williams is the least shocking guy. And I think Spencer Dinwiddie's probably solidified himself in that conversation too.
Would you say he needs to average the numbers that we predicted or a higher set of numbers to win six man?
No, I don't think necessarily the numbers matter, because his numbers from last season almost got him the award. I think it's more than anything, you know, it's plain and simple. If he's healthy enough, if he's playing, you know, 75 regular season games plus, and I think that the Sixth Man of the Year almost has to like sprinkle in a few starters here and then. Like you mentioned, Nick, if Kyrie's going to miss a few games, Spencer's probably going to step up in that department. So, I mean, I don't expect Spencer Dinwiddie to play 82 games. I don't expect many of our players to. But I think Spencer, if he's healthy enough, that's probably going to be more important than the numbers that he puts up, because we know he could put up the numbers on any given night.
And that's a great point, too, with the possibility of getting some starts in there to kind of boost those numbers up. But you're right. Staying healthy is, you know, the main component for a lot of players, and Spencer is one of them. My big question for you is, will Spencer Dinwiddie become an above-average defender this season?
Yeah, it's a good one. And for me, I hope and I think that if we can see that, then it's going to transform this Brooklyn Nets squad. You know, I think Kyrie Irving is probably a little bit better of a defender than D'Angelo Russell, but he was also in a really incredible system in Boston. Not to say that Coach Kenny doesn't have a nice defensive system too in terms of the zone and such. How much of the zone do we use? And is Spencer Dinwiddie a key component of that? You know, if he's playing alongside Karras, both of those guys have some good length, some good size, and some good quickness about them to sort of move around the perimeter. And I think in his one-on-one defense, yes, Karras is going to be that guy, but I want Spencer Dinwiddie to be an above-average defender next year. I don't want him to be – he doesn't have to be an elite defender, because you know, you have guys within their roles, and he's going to be asked a lot of him on the offensive end. But I think he just needs to be engaged and show effort consistently, because I know Nick, my other Aussie Nick, a co-host of JBT, thinks that you know, defense is 90% effort. And I think we saw that effort. We saw that engagement in the playoffs. I think a lot of players generally show it when it really matters. But throughout the 82-game regular season, for the Nets to reach their ceiling at that sort of third seed, we're going to need everyone doing their best and most capable sort of skills on both ends of the floor. And if Spencer's going to show quality defense on the defensive end, then I think that we can really continue to improve there.
Yeah, and he could set the tone as, you know, the second unit's point guard as well. And we should have mentioned this before. I think one area he can improve, and you mentioned his length and his wingspan, like Karis, getting those passing lanes, getting deflections, just disrupting what the offense is trying to do will be big. So I think there's a real possibility for him to become an above average defender. But like you said, and Nick's mentioned before, defense is a lot about effort. And you want to put, you know, at least, I think it's at least 75% of defense. You know, there's obviously athleticism, basketball IQ, and things along those lines. But if he can just put in a little bit more effort on that end, there's no way he can't become a solid defender.
No, and I think that a large chunk of the game is spent on the defensive end. And I know Spencer Dewey doesn't have the Jabari Parker mentality in terms of that, you know, I don't get paid to play defense. No, but I think that Coach Kenny is going to demand, you know, some really good things out of him and some effort out of him. And, you know, we've seen glimpses out of him, so he can't necessarily hide away from the fact that, you know, he's been a poor defender his entire career. He has all the acumen to be. I think we've spoken about it on the Buzz and in other sort of platforms, how the defense and offense, you know, which one's going to be a bit higher. It's going to be interesting. I think we'll probably be a better offensive team, but Spencer Dinwiddie can certainly help us be a better defensive team, because I think that our guards have, you know, enough defensive acumen for us to be above average there at least.
Yeah, and I think it was mentioned on Media Day that, you know, the theme was that maybe this year is the year that Spencer focused on defense. The first year, you know, running the offense, then it was, you know, the assist to turnover ratio, and then last season he was just a scoring monster. So maybe this year it's the defense. But Jack, we got some questions from Twitter.
Yeah, I guess I'll go into Zach's question, which sort of relates to what you're saying, Nick. 2018, Spencer Dinwiddie was efficiency in his passing. You know, his assist to turnover ratio was superb and at an incredibly high volume. 2019 season, he's scoring in bunches. You know, he had that slide, the electric slide and scoop layup. What will be the name of Spencer's game for 2020? No cop-out answers, repeating the same as above. Really creative from my boy Zach there. But is there an element of defense that is in his game, Nick, and we're going to call him the defensive dynamo or the defensive scoring dynamo?
I'll let you come up with a nickname, but I think the focus this year will be defense. Like we mentioned, it was a thing at Media Day, and obviously that's the one area he can improve, because we talked about his offensive game is very good. Obviously want to get up some of the shooting percentages, but if he can pick up that defense, he's going to a next level player. You know, that's a step for him to be maybe a top 50 player. He, you know, I know he was right in the fringe for Corey and you. Maybe if he becomes a two-way guy, that's a boost for him right there.
Yeah, and I mean, that would separate you, because most bench players coming off don't have incredible defensive acumen. They're sort of
especially
just role players.
Six-man guys.
Especially six-man guys. Yeah, I'm going to go with defensive scoring dynamo, a DSD. I love me a good acronym. And I think in terms of scoring, because he's such a good driver and because hopefully he improves that efficiency from the three-point line, I'm not going to put it down to the fact that he's just going to drive, he's just going to do this. And he's working on, you know, a more refined offensive game. So defensive scoring dynamo, Spencer Dinwiddie, the DSD.
Yeah, I like it, Jack. I like it. What else we got?
From Dwayne, we appreciate all your questions, Dwayne. Love your interaction with everywhere on Nets Twitter. He's just a really incredibly switched on fan. Do you remember right after signing his extension, SD balled out for like 2 weeks straight with minimal ref beefing? Do you agree that he can reach another level if he complains to the refs less, or is their lack of respect another motivating chip on his shoulder?
Ooh, that's a good one. It's like a multi-level question. It's like either way, it's like a yes and a no. I think it does have an impact sometimes complaining so much, because there was a few plays where he was complaining, didn't get back on defense. I mean, I think sometimes when you're kind of a lesser known guy, obviously he's still establishing himself in the league, you're not going to get calls. So you do have to kind of, you know, bicker a little bit. But I think this year he should probably have a little bit more notoriety with the referees, and he should get some more calls. Obviously the stats back it up. He deserves to be at the line. So I think, you know, you got to bicker with the refs a little bit if you're not actually getting the calls. We know that happens to the Nets, but don't do it too much, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's picking your battles. And, you know, if you feel a slight... I mean, Spencer isn't the guy to sort of complain for the sake of complaining. I think a lot of the time it is warranted. It is there. But, you know, we don't see LeBron James complaining every single time that he drives into the lane, because he's just an absolute monster of a man, and he gets fouled probably every single time. He doesn't get the call because he's just LeBron James. Whereas it's easy for those smaller guard guys to get the calls. And Spencer isn't necessarily a small guard either. So for like the likes of him, it's a little bit tricky to get those calls. I think that minimal ref beefing, I don't think that he's going to necessarily be a focus or it's going to be a motivating chip. I think that just the internal mechanisms and of wanting to be great and wanting this team to be great, it's going to be enough motivation for him. there might be games here and there where he's sort of wanting to sort of, you know, put some naysayers wrong or shut the refs up for a little bit. I know that he was probably one of our more eloquent speakers when it came to sort of drawing fouls and getting bad calls. I think that'll probably change this season because now we have some superstars on our lineup. But I think that I don't think the complaining to the refs is going to necessarily increase or decrease his game. I think that he's going to be more intelligent in the way that he does it. Not that he has to be. I just think that he's just going to play his game and probably focus more on that. Maybe he's not even driving as much anymore anyway. Maybe he's focusing a bit more on that three-point shot. And maybe he's getting some little nifty hooks there and some floaters. So I think that, yes, it can affect you, but I think at the same time, as long as he's playing his game, and you know, even if you know we see Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and DeAndre and Garrett Temple there, maybe even like, you know, if he does get a little bit up in his head, sort of just having a bit of a word to him, like he's like, Spence, all right, guy, we get it. You know, this is sort of happening. The refs aren't giving you what you'd want. But, you know, just keep attacking, keep attacking. And I think the coaches will do that too. So I don't think it necessarily is going to have an effect, but it is worth discussing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it easily could have no effect. It easily could help. It could not help. And like we said, you know, it's kind of he's getting further along in the league. And last year was a big year for him. So maybe the refs are going to give him more respect. I mean, his free throws went up a lot last year from the previous season. He was definitely getting calls that he wasn't going to get in a 17-18.
Yeah, and I don't think from memory, I did research it last night, there were any point guards who averaged more than like 5.5 or 5.7 free throws a game. And obviously that it's relative what you consider a guard or a point guard or a shooting guard. So as long as that number is, you know, I don't think he can necessarily get more from better officiating. I think he just has to keep doing what he's doing. But Will Jackson, awesome writer, OTGBasketball.com, and regular guest on the show. Do you think he'll benefit from coming off the bench with Jarrett and presumably getting more minutes together? And does he have the best goatee in the NBA?
I think I'll tackle the first part of the question first. You know, the second part is going to take a lot of time. But like we mentioned, you know, is it DeAndre or Jarrett, whoever it is, I think having a rim runner, somebody who can set a good screen and catch an oop, is just going to make his life so much easier because now the defense is just going to have to second guess, oh, should I give more attention to Spencer or watch out for DeAndre Allen at the rim? So I think just having that type of vertical spacing for the offense is going to make his life easier. It could lead to him getting easier attempts at the rim, more free throws, whatever it may be. So I'm really excited for that pairing. I think that's a big thing that we haven't really probably thought about enough this season going to next year. Having two vertical spacing bigs is huge for Kenny's offense.
Yeah, I think it is as well. And I think that, you know, when we speak about chemistry and everything in relation to basketball, you know, these two guys are two of each other's guys' biggest hype men. You know, we've seen Spencer Dinwiddie call Jared Allen a potential top five center in the NBA. We know how well they get along. And obviously, I think that relationship will translate to on-court sort of time. You know, when you're playing, you know, if we're just talking about, you know, just regular sort of social pickup, when you're playing with your friends, you know, you want to play better and you're having better chemistry. You know what they're doing. These guys, Jarrett has spent his entire career playing with Spencer Dinwiddie. They've grown together. And I think that's going to reflect in some really quality on-court time. I was trying to find some sort of numbers to reflect their sort of on-off numbers and their offensive and defensive rating. But again, the NBA stats website, I don't know. It's only 3 weeks from the start of the season. You think they'd get it working.
it might help, you know.
It might help. But in that sort of sense, I think that they're going to be really beneficial together. And like you mentioned, Nick, you know, even if Jared is working that three-point shot and he's sort of hanging around the corner as well to give some different sort of options, it's going to be intriguing and I'm going to be really sort of focused and certainly watching that. And obviously, there's points of the training camp that we're already hearing some really positive things about Jared Allen. We'll touch on that probably on a buzz that's already been talked about, even though we were recording this one before in this weird sort of time continuum. But best goatee in the NBA. I've got some names for you. I don't know if you've done research. I've done thorough research.
All right, let me hear the names because I'm not going to lie. I didn't do research. I'm sorry, Will.
I did do research. Klay Thompson.
Ooh, that's a good one. I don't know. Spencer's has like a really good goatee. Like it's very filled out from mustache all the way down to chin. Like there's not many openings.
It is. It is. There aren't many more. There's probably like only two or three more with similar sort of ones. Stephen Curry.
Steph's just like goes sometimes because it's just not that thick. I mean, I feel it was like last year was like the first year you could really notice his beard a lot. I think Klay's is better. We're just ranking the Splash Brothers.
Yeah, I've got a Stephen Curry sort of beard as well. I can't really get thick enough. I want that Spencer goatee. I want that Spencer sort of facial hair.
I wonder if Spencer can grow a full beard.
It'd be interesting. James Harden style. I don't think James would be too happy about that. He probably could, but I think he looks very slick, handsome, and his face is well shaped.
He's going for the Iron Man look.
I think that's definitely a very good point. I think he's going for Tony look. And now there is no Iron Man. Spencer's going to be stepping up with that mantle, no doubt. J.R. Smith, the forgotten man of the NBA.
Technically not in the NBA at the moment, so can he be ranked?
Of course he can. I like J.R. Don't hate him, my boy, J.R.
I think Spencer hasn't beat.
One I was going to do was Joel Embiid. I like Joel Embiid's sort of goatee action that he has. He's quite slick there as well. And he's got, like, I don't know, his face is proportional. I think that he's probably the one that can challenge Spencer just a little bit.
Yeah, he does. But he's got, like, the full beard, so it kind of takes away because, like, he's going for, like, a more of a thicker facial hair where Spencer has, like, the pure goatee.
He does. I'm literally on I hyped on LinkedIn my doc, NBA goatees, and I think it might have been from Media Day last year where you had a really quality goatee. But Spencer, I think he's got that one down pat. But we'll move on to Tyler Galante, Nick. What kind of role will we see at the end of game for him now that we have Kyrie? Should we let Spencer answer this one?
Yeah, we should. We should.
So Spencer just said, hopefully celebrating hands in the air emoji. I think that looking at that, obviously it's awesome. And we cannot thank Spencer enough for even just interacting with us. But in that sort of sense, it almost just sounds like that he is happy for Kyrie to just do his thing and let him be the guy in clutch time. Know that, you know, he's one of the most clutch players in the NBA, in NBA history. And Spencer is going to be sort of more of an ancillary piece than he has been in the past. And that's not necessarily a bad thing because he has proven it. And if he's given the ball out there and, you know, maybe Kyrie gets doubled, Spencer's going to be able to create his own shot, no doubt.
Yeah, I think this is an aspect where we probably could have mentioned strength is Spencer is very self-aware. Like, he understands the NBA and different players and, you know, this guy's really good. Like, he's not one of those players that's like, oh, he doesn't want to say anything nice about other players. Like, he's talked highly of other guys in the league and having to defend them, and he understands his role. That's why he was able to excel as a sixth man eventually, because he's like, hey, if I'm not a starter, I'm going to be the best sixth man I can be. And I don't think it's completely rolled out. Like, if that three-man lineup of Spencer, Kyrie, and Karis does well, Spencer could be in closing lineup sometime. So I don't think it's like he's never going to see clutch time. Is it probable he's going to be in every clutch moment? No, but there's going to be times for him to step up. Like you said, Kyrie's getting a double. He's open on the wing, knock down the three.
Spencer is a better three-point shooter than Karis LeVert.
Yeah.
So in certain lines, when you're looking for that three or you want to nail the game or tie the game, you would almost, and this isn't, maybe it's sacrilege to you, but it's depending on how Karis shoots next season, I'd rather have Spencer out there for certain sort of moments on offensive possessions, obviously. You know, he's one of our, and even like we spoke about the numbers and we expect to see a jump there. We know he has the confidence there. And even if he's missed four or five threes, you know, he's going to take the sixth one and he'll probably hit it. And he's done that in the past. He's done that consistently. And he's going to have the confidence to do so. And that self-awareness is incredible. And I think that self-awareness of where he is within the team and how he can contribute and how he can be the best teammate he can be, how he can be the best version of himself as a player on and off the court. I'm excited to see the role that he will play. But I'm hoping he's celebrating as well. And hopefully he's leading some dance moves as Kyrie hits plenty of dagger threes and dagger shots for us.
Hopefully Kyrie and him on the bench together and the Nets are just blowing everybody out.
Big time. Big time.
But Jack, any other questions or anything else you want to touch on, Dinwiddie related?
Corey said sixth man of the year. I think we discussed that one a little bit. I guess we'll end it with it because it's probably the narrative surrounding Spencer Dinwiddie the most, other than the whole contract, which is, you know, I listened to a little bit more. I still don't understand it, but I think it's just really cool that people are doing different things. Sixth man of the year, I don't think he'll win it. But
put a percentage on it.
Oh, okay. I know you love your percentages. That he'll win it?
Yeah.
75%.
75% Spencer's going to win it? Like, he's a favorite?
Okay, so what if I'm going like Lou Williams is the favorite, does that mean like I give Lou Williams like 50%, Spencer Dinwiddie 40%, and the field 10%? Is that better?
Yeah, I like that better.
All right, cool. A bit more eloquent in the way that I sort of put it. But yeah, the contract is an interesting thing. I think we haven't really delved into it well enough because I don't think we're smart enough to probably know the inner workings of it and obviously what it sort of entails.
Well, currently the NBA says he's not allowed to do it. I don't know if you saw that he's no longer allowed to put his contract up. And from my understanding, what he was doing was he was allowing people to invest in him so he could get the upfront money for his contract and then pay these people back later on and potentially increase the profit and give them back more money than they put in.
Yeah, apparently, I think he was on Evan Roberts' podcast yesterday. I had a bit of a listen before today's episode, where it might be back on, but only people with certain amounts of money can invest. I think, don't quote me on this, it was like $150,000. So unless
I saw that number floating around.
Yeah, so if anyone can lend me $149,000, I'd be really grateful. I can invest in my boy. But I think a lot of his on-court exploits, but Spence was one of the most switched-on guys in the NBA. His intelligence level, and I think that, you know, the what he's going to bring to this team in terms of that, and we hear him speak to the media, and, you know, just the confidence level that he has. He's incredibly well-spoken, incredibly personable, and I think he's going to be one of the better sort of chemistry guys within the locker room. You know, I think him and Kyrie are going to vibe incredibly well. We know Spencer vibes and gets along so well with all of his teammates. I know he can grind on his coach a little bit at times with his shot selection, but you know, hopefully if he's listened to this podcast, he'll know when and where to sort of take those sort of shots. But I mean, I'm really, really excited for Spencer. I think he's one of the underrated sort of storylines heading into 2019-24, this Brooklyn Nets squad.
Yeah, and I mean, we didn't even talk about his sneakers and that whole line that he did. And last year, having a different shoe every game and things along those lines. So, like you said, he's one of the more interesting guys around the league. And it's kind of nice the Nets are getting more hype. So that should lead to, you know, more media availability for him to get interviews, podcast appearance, whatever it may be.
Yeah, maybe a Brooklyn Buzz appearance. You know, maybe. We are at, you know our Twitter profiles.
You're always more than welcome to hop on. And we will not just talk basketball as well. But
yeah, my guy Nick knows plenty about Iron Man.
But we are going to wrap this one up. Jack, always a pleasure. Big thanks, everybody, for listening. Find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.